From NPR News, this is a special report. I'm Linda Wertheimer. Monday evening, President Obama traveled to the United States Military Academy at West Point to announce his decision on sending additional troops to Afghanistan. He made the announcement to the Corps of Cadets, young men and women who may someday fight there.
As Commander-in-Chief, I have determined that it is in our vital national interest to send an additional 30,000 U.S. troops to Afghanistan. After 18 months, our troops will begin to come home. These are the resources that we need to seize the initiative while building the Afghan capacity that can allow for a responsible transition of our forces out of Afghanistan. I do not make this decision lightly. I opposed the war in Iraq precisely because I believe that we must exercise restraint in the use of military force and always consider the long-term consequences of our actions.
The deployment of 30,000 additional troops to Afghanistan, including soldiers and Marines, will begin soon and will bring American force levels in the country to 98,000. The president said the increase in troop levels would last until the summer of 2011. In what was the most controversial part of his statement, he said, at that time, American troops would begin to hand over the mission to Afghan forces, and U.S. military personnel would start to come home. The next morning, three of the president's top foreign policy and military advisers went to Capitol Hill to discuss details of the president's plan. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, and Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, spent the morning with the Senate Armed Services Committee. In the afternoon, the trio answered questions from the House Foreign Affairs Committee. At the Senate hearing, the chairman and ranking member of the committee offered snapshots of the reaction from members of both parties in Congress. Democrats voiced concerns about escalating a war many feel has gone on too long, and Republicans expressed worries that the president, by setting a timeline to begin bringing troops home, is sending the wrong signal. Committee Chairman Senator Carl Levin, a Democrat from Michigan, says he believes the main objective of U.S. troop increases should be to speed up the transfer of power in Afghanistan and, in effect, accelerate the U.S. exit.
I agree with the president's emphasis on the training and rapid growth of the Afghanistan National Security Forces and transitioning responsibility to the Afghan government for Afghanistan security. Indeed, I have long believed that the most urgent need in Afghanistan is to provide the training, from basic training to mentoring to side-by-side partnering on the battlefield, along with the equipment and the other support elements to rapidly build the capabilities of the Afghan Army and police. An Afghan surge should be our goal, and any U.S. surge should be related to that goal. The President has also called for increased contributions from our NATO allies. We need not only to Afghanize, but to NATOize the Afghanistan mission.
Senator John McCain of Arizona, the ranking Republican on the committee, also supported the president's plan, noting that most of the elements he thought would be important are contained in it. But McCain said he remains concerned about establishing a timetable for withdrawal.
I support the president's decision, and I think it deserves the support of all Americans, both Republicans and Democrats. While I do not support What I don't support and what concerns me greatly is the president's decision to set an arbitrary date to begin withdrawing U.S. forces from Afghanistan. A date for withdrawal sends exactly the wrong message to both our friends and our enemies in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and the entire region, all of whom currently doubt whether America is committed to winning this war. A withdrawal date only emboldens al-Qaeda and the Taliban while dispiriting our Afghan partners and making it less likely that they will risk their lives to take our side in this fight.
Secretary of Defense Robert Gates also began with an opening statement. He emphasized that the additional troops will make an intense effort to reverse momentum the Taliban appears to have and, in his word, to degrade the Taliban. The approach is not open-ended, Gates said, and it does not include establishing a Western-style nation-state, the likes of which has never existed in Afghanistan.
The essence of our civil military plan is to clear, hold, build, and transfer. Beginning to transfer security responsibility to the Afghans in summer 2011 is critical, and in my view, achievable. This transfer will occur district by district, province by province, depending on conditions on the ground. The process will be similar to what we did in Iraq, where international security forces provided overwatch, first at the tactical level and then at the strategic level. Even after we transfer security responsibility to the Afghans and draw down our combat forces, the United States will continue to support their development as an important partner for the long haul. We will not repeat the mistakes of 1989, when we abandoned the country only to see it descend into chaos and into Taliban hands.
Secretary Gates ended by telling the committee that, serious and difficult though it is, the mission in Afghanistan is nowhere near as difficult as the war in Iraq has been. Following Gates, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton made the point that an American commitment of aid and civilian help in Afghanistan will go on for a long time beyond military involvement, and that the process for civilians will be complex.
The duration of our military presence is not open-ended, but our civilian commitment must continue even as our troops begin eventually to come home. Accomplishing this mission and ensuring the safety of the American people will not be easy. It will mean sending not only more troops, but more civilians and more assistance to Afghanistan and significantly expanding our civilian efforts in Pakistan. The men and women carrying out this military-civilian mission are not members of a list or items on a PowerPoint slide. They are our friends and neighbors, our sons and daughters, our brothers and sisters, and we will be asking them and the American people to make extraordinary sacrifices on behalf of our security.
After Secretary Clinton's opening remarks, Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, emphasized the importance of Afghanistan to U.S. security, saying that destruction of the Taliban is critical to ending the access of extremists to Afghanistan.
This region is the epicenter of global Islamic extremism. It is the place from which we were attacked on 9/11. And should we be hit again, it's the place from which I am convinced the planning, training, and funding will emanate. Al-Qaeda may in fact be the architect of such an attack, but the Taliban will be the bricklayers. Though hardly a uniform body, Taliban groups have grown bolder and more sophisticated. We saw that just a few months ago in the Korangal Valley, where Taliban forces attacked coalition outposts using what I would call almost conventional small unit tactics. Their fighters are better organized and better equipped than they were just 1 year ago. In fact, coalition forces experienced record high violence this past summer, with insurgent attacks more than 60% above 2008 levels.
That was Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, in an opening statement this morning before the Senate Armed Services Committee. He was accompanied by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Secretary of Defense Robert Gates. We're joined now by NPR's Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman. Welcome, Tom.
Hi, Linda.
Tom, the president's plan for sending more troops, I guess the question everyone has is, when do they go?
Well, some of the troops will start going before Christmas. They'll be the Marines from Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And a total of 9,000 Marines will be going to Afghanistan from bases all around the world. Some of the Marine equipment already has started heading over there by sea. We also expect four Army brigades. That's roughly 20,000 troops. We don't know where they're coming from yet, but I've been told to keep an eye on Fort Drum, New York, where the 10th Mountain Division is, and also Fort Campbell, Kentucky, home of the 101st Airborne Division. We could get a decision on troops next week.
The president is also calling upon NATO nations to send troops. How many NATO troops does he want, and where would they come from?
Well, we're told they're looking for 5,000 or more NATO troops. Already Britain has said they're going to send hundreds more. Italy and Poland have talked about sending additional forces as well. And I think it might be more than just troops. I'm told that Richard Holbrooke, the special envoy for Afghanistan and Pakistan, will be going to Europe later this week trying to find civilian police trainers over there. So they're looking for any kind of Europeans they can get to help in this effort.
The timeline that the president has set for starting to reduce force levels, that seems to be the hitch in this whole plan.
Exactly. He talked about starting to bring troops home in July 2011. He was careful not to say how many troops he'll bring home, so I think some Democrats jumped on that. He also didn't say how long U.S. troops would be in Afghanistan. He gave no hint of that. So by next summer, you're going to have 100,000 American troops, roughly, in Afghanistan. Some will start coming out by July 2011, so we don't know when the rest will come out. That's the big hitch here. And also he said in his speech that we will train and assist Afghan forces, quote, for the long haul. So that also leaves the indication that U.S. troops would be there for a number of years.
I got the impression, listening to Mr. Gates talking about reduce the Taliban momentum and then reverse it, deny access to the population, disrupt them everywhere, degrade them everywhere. I got the impression he's thinking of a fairly violent beginning to this new group of people going over to Afghanistan from the U.S.
Oh, there's no question. I think the Marines you'll see get in operations fairly early, maybe even before the spring in Helmand province. I was there back in October and November. There are certain areas they want to clear out of Taliban and narco traffickers as well. One particular area is called Marja, a huge area with irrigation canals and small towns and villages. It's really a district. But it's a very, very dangerous area. So look, you're going to hear a lot about this place called Marja in the coming months.
NPR Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman, thank you, and stay with us. We'll hear more soon on today's hearings at the Senate Armed Services Committee and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And we'll be joined by more NPR correspondents, NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson, our congressional correspondent David Wellner, and from London, our correspondent Rob Gifford. You're listening to a special report from NPR News. From NPR News, this is a special report. I'm Linda Wertheimer. President Obama dispatched his diplomatic and military heavy hitters to Capitol Hill. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Defense Secretary Robert Gates, and Admiral Mike Mullen, who's chairman of the Joint Chiefs, they all appeared before the Senate Armed Services Committee in the morning and in the House Foreign Affairs Committee in the afternoon. The three administration officials provided some details and some explanations of the president's decision to send 30,000 additional troops to Afghanistan. At the Senate Armed Services Committee, when it came time for the senators to ask questions, most of them praised the president's decision with reservations. The committee chairman, Democratic Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, had doubts about how quickly U.S. forces can train their Afghan counterparts to a level where they might take over responsibility for maintaining stability in important regions. The ranking Republican, Senator John McCain of Arizona, took issue with the president's statement that the United States will begin the transition out of Afghanistan in July of 2011. Will we withdraw no matter what, he asked, and Secretary Gates answered this way.
Our current plan is that we will begin the transition in local areas in July of 2011. We will evaluate in December 2010 whether we believe we will be able to meet that objective.
I think that's got to be made very clear, because right now the expectation level, the American people, because of the president's speech, is that we will be withdrawing as of July 2011, regardless of conditions on the ground. I think that's the wrong impression to give our friends. It's the wrong impression to give our enemies. It's the wrong impression to give the men and women who want to go over there and win, not start withdrawing on an arbitrary date. And that's, unfortunately, that has not been made clear at all.
Despite his doubts, as he said in his statement at the start of the hearing, Senator McCain is basically on board with the president's plan. Senator Joe Lieberman, an independent from Connecticut, pushed Secretary Gates again on how seriously the Congress should take the president's deadline for beginning withdrawal, and would withdrawal happen if Afghan troops were not ready to take over?
We're likely to transfer, am I right, security responsibilities to the Afghans in the areas that are most stable, that are most uncontested at the beginning. And at the beginning, we probably will put our troops back a ways just to see how that works rather than taking them out of the country.
We're not just going to throw these guys into the swimming pool.
Got it.
And walk away. I mean, the reality is, first of all, these transfers are going to take place in the most uncontested places in Iraq,
right.
So in Afghanistan. So just as in Iraq, you may have some districts and provinces being transferred to Afghan security responsibility, and at the very same time have extraordinarily heavy combat going on in other provinces around the country, which is exactly what we saw in Iraq.
And am I right that in the policy that the president announced last night, which does begin a transfer of security responsibility of July 2011 to the Afghans, there is no deadline for the end of that transfer? It will be based on conditions on the ground.
It will be based on conditions on the ground. But by the same token, we want to communicate to the Afghans,
right,
that this is not an open-ended commitment on,
agreed,
the part of the American people and our allies around the world.
And I agree with that.
Because we have to build a fire under them, frankly, to get them to do the kind of recruitment, retention, training, and so on for their forces that allow us to make this transition. Let me just draw one other analogy to Iraq. In Iraq, once it was clear the surge was working, it was pretty plain that the Iraqis wanted us out,
right,
about as fast as possible. The security agreement and everything flowed from that. That's not entirely clear in Afghanistan. They live in a very rough neighborhood. And so we have the balancing act here, and frankly, the centerpiece of our debates for the last several months is, how do you get the Afghans to begin to step up to responsibility for their own future, their own security, in a way that allows us to have confidence that they will not once again become the safe haven for al-Qaeda? That's figuring out that balance in terms of how you incentivize and give a sense of urgency to the Afghans and at the same time signal resolve to our adversaries was the tough part of this for us.
Another question about transferring responsibility to Afghan forces in 2011 was raised by Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat from Rhode Island.
Mr. Secretary, some of the criticism of even talking about a date, regardless of whether it's a hard, unconditional withdrawal as in Iraq or the proposal of the president, is that would embolden the enemy on one hand, or on the other hand, they would lie low and wait us out. It strikes me as that the Taliban has been emboldened quite aggressively over the last several years without any type of deadline, and if they sit it out, what would you do if they simply gave up the operational space to us for 18 months or 2 years?
Well, we certainly would welcome them not being active for the next 18 months because it would give us open field running with our allies and the Afghans to build capacity. I think, as you make the point, we are already in a situation in which they are emboldened and in which they are being aggressive, and where they have the momentum right now. And so it's not clear to me what more they could do than they're doing right now. The forces that we're sending in are intended, in the first instance, as the Admiral has said, is to reverse that momentum and deny them the ability to control territory.
Another area that clearly concerns some senators is whether the United States will continue to have the help of NATO nations, whether NATO allies will continue to be willing to put their troops in harm's way. Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, raised that issue.
Secretary Gates and Admiral Mullen, would you grade NATO in terms of their effectiveness as a fighting force over the last several years?
I think that it varies from country to country, Senator.
Senator, I mean they have bled and died.
I know they have, but you give them an A to an F. NATO is an effective fighting force, an A to an F, not just part of it, all of it.
Senator, in all honesty, I don't think any good purpose is served by doing that. I would say that those who have been fighting with us in the South, the Australians, the British, the Dutch, the Danes, the Canadians, the Poles, I'd give them all an A.
Great.
That was Secretary Gates. NATO came up again when Senator Kay Hagan, a Democrat from North Carolina, brought up countries which have already expressed an intention to withdraw troops stationed in Afghanistan.
Some of the countries have mentioned in the past about starting their own withdrawals. In particular, I believe Germany has suggested a transition by 2013, and they have 4,000 troops. Canada suggesting some pullout in 2011 in Kandahar. They have 2,500 troops. The Italian leaders, 2,800 troops, leaving Herat by December 2011. Dutch leaders suggesting they might want to pull out by 2010. And I was just wondering if that is still a concern. And Secretary Gates, if you have some information on that.
I think our hope is that the president's speech last night and his decisions will help change the political dynamic among some of our allies. And I must say, just the first first reactions that I saw on the news this morning from the Europeans, I think were very encouraging. President Sarkozy's comments, the comments of the NATO Secretary General, and so on. And so I think that I'm not aware of a German commitment or any kind of firm decision to leave at a particular time. But our hope is that what the president has decided will change the political dynamic. The truth of the matter is the governments, and Admiral Mullen and I run into this all the time, the governments of our allies are really very strongly supportive of the mission in Afghanistan.
Senator Ben Nelson, a Democrat from Nebraska, wanted to know about benchmarks. Would the administration keep careful track of how the new plan is working, both on the military and on the civilian side? He was told that there will be monthly reports and a big rethinking of the process right around this time next year. Secretary Clinton talked about a few of the benchmarks being considered on the civilian side.
When President Karzai took office, there were a little less than a million students in school, and they were virtually all boys. Now there are 7 million, and about 40% are girls. But there are 5 to 6 million yet to go. So that's a very clear benchmark. In the agricultural area, we've already rehabilitated irrigation canals. We've worked closely with the agricultural ministry. We helped them, as did other international donors with whom we coordinate, to provide hardier seeds so that they had a bumper wheat crop. They just had their first big shipment of apples and pomegranates to India. We are supporting their acquisition of better fertilizer and farm equipment. So again, there are measurable benchmarks. How much is the agricultural economy improving? How many people are employed? What is the relationship between a lower poppy crop and a higher licit list of crops? And we are working with the governance and rule of law challenges as well. So in each of these areas, we have realistic expectations. We are trying to have good measurements, and we will be carefully following that to see what kind of progress we're making.
However, Secretary Clinton made clear that the president's plan for Afghanistan does not contemplate a wholesale revision of that country. The State Department is sending more civilian experts and is supporting charitable organizations, which will help in the rebuilding effort. But Clinton said everything about Afghanistan is difficult and made much more difficult and more expensive by logistics and by corruption.
If you think about the long supply chain lines that we have getting into Afghanistan, when our equipment, our food, everything that our troops use, our civilians depend on, largely comes from the outside. When a ship docks at Karachi and the goods get loaded onto trucks, and then the trucks start that long trip through Pakistan up into Afghanistan, I mean, it's a very difficult environment to operate in. And there's a lot of evidence that in addition to funding from the Gulf and the illegal narcotics trade that's siphoning off contractual money from the international community in terms of just outright fraud and corruption, but also intimidation and extortion, is a major source of funding for the Taliban. So, you know, we just have to be honest here about how complex and difficult this problem is, and how, frankly, it is not all an Afghan problem.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton testifying before the Senate Armed Services Committee. She appeared during the morning along with the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, and Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. In the afternoon, the trio moved on to the House side of the Capitol to appear before the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and we'll hear more about that in a little while. We're joined now by NPR's congressional correspondent David Wellna. Our Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman is here with me in the studio. And in London, our correspondent Rob Gifford is still awake. Welcome to all of you.
Hi, Linda.
Thanks, Linda. Hi.
David, let me start with you and the atmosphere in the committee room. My sense was that the president has basically sold this, although people have some concerns that they were raising. What's your sense?
Well, as for the atmosphere, I would say heavy, in a word, was the sense there. The lawmakers on the dais looked about as thrilled to be there as someone who was about to have a root canal. This is not something that anyone really relishes that they have to be talking about, because this is a war that is weighing very much on this nation. And you know, the trio of top administration officials who were sitting at the witness table were decidedly somber. You know, when you think about it, you had two holdovers there from the Bush administration, Admiral Mullen and Defense Secretary Gates, who were essentially repudiating the way the Afghan war was fought during that administration and trying to sell Congress on an approach that was chosen by a Democrat who opposed the Iraq War. And then there was Hillary Clinton, the same former presidential candidate whose campaign ads once asked who would be the best fit to take that 3 a.m. crisis phone call. And here she was selling the plan of the guy who won that race. And then the other element in the hearing rooms was the audience, which was decidedly subdued as well. There were war protesters there, but they only vocally protested once the Senate Armed Services hearing had ended.
Tom, Rob Gifford, I want to ask the two of you about NATO. Tom, there was a sort of a slightly snide crack from Senator Lindsey Graham. He said A to F, grade the performance of NATO forces, all of them. And Secretary Gates talked about the forces that have fought with us, he said.
Yeah, there are also snide comments over in Afghanistan from American soldiers and Marines. This collective group of Americans and their allies known as the International Security Assistance Force, or ISAF, some Americans crack that really stands for I Saw Americans Fighting, that some of these countries have national caveats that prevent them from getting involved in combat operations. Some of these countries don't even patrol. But on the other hand, there are some countries, particularly Britain, that really gets out there in the fight and have lost quite a number of people. Canadians as well have probably lost the largest number of people per capita by ratio than any other country. So you really have to pick and choose some of the countries there. But there are complaints over there about NATO really not doing enough.
Rob, what was the reaction in Europe? What was the first reaction there to the president's announcement?
Well, I think it does divide very much between the political people, the politicians, and then the popular response. By and large, the politicians welcomed the speech from President Obama. We heard the Secretary General of NATO welcoming it and saying that NATO would add more troops. We've heard Gordon Brown and other leaders from around Europe saying they will do everything they can to help. But for a start, what they are doing to help, as we've heard, is in some ways minimal. When you hear Gordon Brown say that he's going to add 500 troops, and you're hearing President Obama saying 30,000 troops, that's a huge difference. On the other hand, you've got the popular feeling here, and I think there is just a general weariness, as there is in the United States. But of course, in the U.S., you do have the fact that 9/11 was plotted in Afghanistan. You do have that sort of visceral connection to the war in Afghanistan. In Britain, some of the plots we know were hatched on the Afghan-Pakistan border, so there is a feeling about it as well. But as you get into continental Europe, there is a real weariness and a sort of a difficulty in connecting with why they should send more troops.
The folks in the White House are talking about 200 here, 500 there, 800 somewhere else, as if they were coming in relatively small increments. But then Secretary Gates and Secretary Clinton both said that they thought perhaps that had been turned around by the president's speech. Do you think that that the president's personal popularity in Europe is sort of is still in effect, even for the Afghan war?
I think it is. I mean, he gets a lot of credit here in Europe simply for not being President Bush. And of course, many people here have said that's basically the reason he got the Nobel Peace Prize, which he's coming to collect soon. But I think there is a reality setting in, as it has in the United States, that one person in Germany who I spoke to today said, you know, the honeymoon is over, really, because of various newspapers in Germany saying, hey, look, we thought Obama was going to be different, and he's now cranking up the war effort even more and sending 30,000 more. That's what Bush would have done. That's what Bush did do. This guy's no different from President Bush. By and large, though, I think that's a minority view, and Obama still has a lot of capital over here.
NPR's London correspondent Rob Gifford, thank you very much. Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman and congressional correspondent David Wellna, thank you all. And please don't go anywhere. We're going to have more coming up. We'll also be joined by NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson, and we'll hear more about the appearances on Capitol Hill by the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, and Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. You're listening to a special report from NPR News. From NPR News, this is a special report on President Obama's new plan for Afghanistan, 30,000 additional troops to go in as quickly as possible, and then a transition out of that country to begin in July of 2011. I'm Linda Wertheimer. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, and Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, visited Congress to explain what the president hopes will be accomplished in Afghanistan over the next 18 months and how a withdrawal might begin at the end of that period. After they spent the morning with the Senate Armed Services Committee, the House Foreign Affairs Committee got the group for the afternoon. Many of the issues raised were the same, but not all. A number of House members went back to basics, including Democratic Representative Gary Ackerman of New York, who asked Secretary of State Clinton if the war in Afghanistan is worth fighting at all.
We have a shack that's on fire, but it's located next to the dynamite factory. And the question that I think I know the answer to, but my constituents keep asking, is it worth risking the lives of those who respond to the fire in a place that may or may not hold a lot of value in and of itself? And what's going to be the result, and what would happen if we don't respond to that? I guess the question I would ask is this. As of 8 o'clock last night, do we have a new war, or do we have an old war under new ownership? Or is it the same war with a new management strategy to muscle up and have a more elegant exit plan?
Congressman, the process that we have gone through has been aimed at testing every assumption, asking all the hard questions. I think it's fair to say that if the president could have concluded that this was an old war that could be wound down and walked away from, that would certainly have been an easier choice. He is, as we all are, well aware of the political and the economic and the loss of young men and women that this decision presages. But the dynamite factory is there, and unfortunately, it's been stocked with even more dynamite in the last couple of years, and therefore, we think we have to address it.
That was Secretary of State Hillary Clinton responding to New York Democratic Representative Gary Ackerman. Congressman Ron Paul of Texas is on the Foreign Affairs Committee. He ran for president twice, once as a Republican, once as a Libertarian. And he was one of six Republicans in the House who voted against giving President Bush the authority to go to war in Iraq. Famous in the House for his sometimes obscure rhetorical flourishes, Paul said he wished he could promise a gracious speech and profundity, but he said, "We're in a mess trying to justify a war we've been in for 8 years."
I wished I could promise you an eloquent statement where I could convert all of you to a non-interventionist foreign policy and a policy where we're not nation-building, but I think I can promise you that. I wished I could come up with some profound questions for the panel so that I could point out the inconsistencies, not of the current foreign policy, but the foreign policy that's been going on for quite a few decades. But all I can think about are some terms that come to mind that I've learned all the way back in the 1960s when I was serving as an Air Force officer for 5 years. And I come up with thoughts, quagmire, perpetual war for perpetual peace. War is the health of the state. War is a racket. Truth is the first casualty of war. And I think there's some profoundness to that, and I had to plagiarize them. Those are not my thoughts. But today, we're in a mess, and we're trying to figure out how to do it. We've had a war going on for 8 years. I think it has a lot to do with the way we get into the wars, and then we try to deal with it. We try to justify why we're there later on. One thing that almost all debates are prefaced by is, don't come off as an extremist. Can we have a military victory? Have 500,000 troops, go in there and win like we used to? No, that's off base. But you want to just come home? No, that's not a lot. We have to have this balancing act which guarantees the politicizing of the war. This is why we end up with court martials and arguments that are justified. We end up with military tribunals and secret prisons because we're not precise of what our goals are and why we're involved. And I think that is the biggest problem that we have. And what we need to do, I think, is try to be more precise about why we go into war. Now, the question I have for the panel, and I hope each and every one of you can answer this question, is I would like to know whether or not you endorse the Bush Doctrine. Ironically, last night the speech was given, which truly was eloquent, but it was given in the same place that the former president gave a speech in 2002 and emphasized a profound, dramatic change in our attitude toward the world. And it's recognized now as the Bush Doctrine. I think it's something, maybe one of the most important events in our history when it comes down to foreign policy. So each and every one of you, do you endorse the Bush Doctrine of preventive war, or do you reject it?
I think that the term preventive war is a very important one because it differentiates from preemptive war. A preemptive war, in my view, is one where you know you're about to be attacked and you strike first. My personal view is that the standard for intelligence and for confidence for preventive war is an extraordinarily high one. And there are very, very few instances where I think it is justified. If the experience of the last 8 years has taught us anything, it is to reaffirm the historic lesson that war is inherently unpredictable.
Could I get the answers from the other two?
Well, Congressman, I think that Secretary Gates draws an important distinction. There are times when it is appropriate for a country to protect itself from what it knows would be a devastating attack. But that standard should be so high, and obviously we didn't see that standard met in the last 8 years. But let me just add, that is not the situation in Afghanistan. We were attacked from Afghanistan. So even if the doctrine is or is not an appropriate one, it is not applicable to the situation before us.
But we were never attacked by an Afghani.
That's not true. Al-Qaeda was embedded in Afghan society. It was given safe haven by Mullah Omar and the Taliban leadership, and they were given a chance to turn over Al-Qaeda and bin Laden before we attacked them, and they refused.
House members, like their colleagues in the Senate, also raised questions about the participation of NATO allies, whether or not they will supply the troops the president wants. One member wondered if the president's plan would work without those troops. Several House members raised questions about whether this new plan for Afghanistan will work at all. One was Congressman Elliot Engel, a Democrat from New York, who heard from all three administration witnesses on his question. Engel wanted to know what would happen if everything goes wrong, if the U.S. gets bogged down in this war. He also wanted to know about the hunt for Osama bin Laden.
Where is Osama bin Laden, and why can't we seem to get him? If we're relying on our intelligence to tell us that this is what we should be doing next in Afghanistan, and our intelligence can't even tell us where he is. There was a recent Senate report which says that shortly after the war in Afghanistan began, we had Osama bin Laden and we let him slip through our fingers. How much can we count on our intelligence now when we can't even capture one guy in 8 years?
Let me start with the last one first. Actually, there has been a considerable diminishment of al-Qaeda over the last couple of years in terms of their leadership, obviously not bin Laden or Zawahiri specifically. And what I've learned over the years, and particularly in the last several years, is individuals like him, and it's not unique, quite frankly, to him in this area, that they one of their job one for them is survival, and they do it really well. And so it's not, and we have good intelligence and good agencies, and it's improved a great deal, and I rely on them tremendously. That said, it's still a big problem, and it doesn't mean we're not trying to find him and the rest of the leadership. With respect to, I'm sorry, the first part of your question?
Getting bogged down in an endless war.
No, sir,
what do we do?
It's not going to happen. I mean, it's part of the, it's very clear, this president has said it, the military leadership understands it, that this is not open-ended and we are not going to escalate. We believe that these troops, this strategy, the civilian surge that goes with it, the opportunity we have because Pakistan is making progress, we've got a new president in Afghanistan, we've got the right leadership on the ground, we've got the right leadership in the embassy, that now is the time and we can actually turn this thing around. And so I don't have an expectation that we're going to get bogged down there or that there will be requests for any additional troops.
Secretary Clinton?
Well, Congressman, I think that your focus on bin Laden is absolutely appropriate. I share your frustration that 8 years from the attack that devastated New York has not led to the killing or capturing of bin Laden and his principal lieutenants. As Admiral Mullen said, we have degraded their leadership. We have been successful in going after a number of mainstays of his organization, but we haven't gotten him, and we haven't gotten Zawahiri, and we haven't gotten Mullah Omar. And I think that has to be a primary goal of what it is we're doing. And it certainly is for me, and I think it is for the president. And part of the strategy that we're unfolding, we think will assist us. And I would just add that, you know, this strategy has been largely on the military side influenced by General Petraeus and General McChrystal, one of whom is our foremost expert on counterinsurgency, the other on counterterrorism. And I think that there's reason to put a lot of stock in their opinion.
I would just add one thing. The president gives the orders, but every man and woman that is deployed overseas is deployed over my signature.
And if I came to conclude that we were bogged down and stalemated and we were sending young men and women into a maw with no purpose and no hope of success, I wouldn't sign any more of those orders.
Well, that was the Secretary of Defense. We're joined by NPR congressional correspondent David Wellna, London correspondent Rob Gifford, Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman, and our national political correspondent Mara Liasson. Mara, you've been watching this process at the White House for over 2 months as the president has worked on this decision. How do you think he's doing in terms of the public reaction and the reaction on the Hill?
Well, first of all, it's been going on for actually more than 3 months. The process was very deliberate and controlled and lengthy. What strikes me is how now the success of this strategy depends on so many things that are completely beyond the president's control. But I do think in terms of how he's doing, I think he's getting the reaction that he expected. Democrats leery, Republicans favorable to the basic strategy, but find fault in some of the details like the setting of a deadline. I think the president was determined throughout this long process of decision-making to find a sustainable strategy that the American people could support. He downsized the goals in Afghanistan. He has always been skeptical of a maximalist strategy there. And he is no longer doing nation building. He just wants to degrade al-Qaeda to the point where the Afghan forces, being beefed up with our support, can take over. Whether he can, A, make this work in Afghanistan, and, B, maintain just the minimal amount of support in the American public remains to be seen.
David Wellna, is the Congress likely to throw any kind of a hitch on into his progress here?
Well, the Congress does have the power of the purse, and, of course, Congress has to approve any financing for this troop surge.
And they're estimating something like $30 billion.
Yes, and that would probably be one of these emergency supplemental spending bills that financed the Iraq War in the past. That probably won't come up until sometime next year, and that's probably when we're going to get the big debate on the Afghan policy. But at that point, troops will already be on their way there. Some will have arrived already. I think that the votes are here to approve that money, but it's probably going to take a lot of Republicans voting because there are many, many Democrats who at least right now are saying that they're not on board with this. Many were pleased that there was a target date for beginning troop pullout in July of 2011, but they're dismayed by the fact that 30,000 more U.S. troops are headed to Afghanistan. At the same time, Republicans, as Mara said, they seem to be on board with the troop surge, but they have their questions about that target date.
Tom, this all got started with a report from General McChrystal, the commander in Afghanistan, who wanted 40,000 troops. We didn't quite get all of that. Do you think that this is going to make a difference in what the military will be able to do?
Well, it's an open question. I was asking people all day, what did McChrystal not get here? He wanted 40,000 troops. So is he going to get fewer combat troops, fewer trainers? And his people have long said that if they don't get the number that they need, it means that there's more risk in not being able to meet the mission or having the mission take longer. So I think that's still an open question. I'm trying to get some answers to that.
Rob Gifford, much of Europe has been a little bit less patient with the president. You were saying earlier that you think he's still got the personal popularity to pull this off.
I think he probably has just about. He's got the old allies like Britain. He's got some new allies like Poland, some of the new members like Slovakia, Georgia, putting forward some troops. And it should be said, of course, that this is not Iraq. Europe was very much against the Iraq war, and this is different. It is seen as, in some ways, justifiable for all the problems and all the caveats that people give. But I think people do really want to get out pretty soon, and they're looking towards that 2011 date.
Mara, can you give us a quick estimate of what you think the politics of this are going to be a little bit down the road? So maybe as far even as midterm elections?
Well, I think that it will probably cause some diminution in the energy and excitement of the president's left-wing base. There's a lot of grumbling on the left. Michael Moore is incensed, and all sorts of bloggers are unhappy. So I don't think that's good. I do think, though, that the ultimate politics of this will depend on what happens on the ground in Afghanistan. I think in the end, the president doesn't have a domestic political problem. He has a military problem in Afghanistan, and that's the one he has to solve, and the politics will follow that.
Thanks very much. Mara Liasson, who's our national political correspondent, also Rob Gifford, reporting from London, Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman, and our congressional correspondent David Wellner. Thank you all so much for joining us. This special report was directed by Gwen Newton, edited by Stu Seidel and Bruce Oster, produced by Giselle Grayson with help from Susanna George. The sound engineer was Kurt Stallnecker. I'm Linda Wertheimer, and this has been a special report from NPR News.